Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
And thank you so much for staying with us. So, Africa US Universities Network Conference 2025 was held at WITS a couple of days ago. In fact, it was between the 1st and the 3rd of July. And while South Africa US diplomacy and diplomatic relations are recalibrating, as the politicians tell us, a lot of other things are happening behind the scenes. So on the line with us, we've got Director of the African Studies at Georgetown University, Professor Laura Smith, who actually was here for that conference. I really appreciate your time, Professor Smith. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Let's just, you know, I briefly mentioned the fact that we are starting to recalibrate our relationship between ourselves and the US. But the fact of the matter is that while we saw what happened at the Oval Office and all of that, things continue to sort of, you know, go about as usual. Academics continue to have relations and continue to discuss, you know, things that are really, really important amongst ourselves. I see on the program here, one of the issues was, for instance, decolonizing the curriculum. That's been a discussion point for South Africans for a long time now. It's very, very important to us, and many, many other things. Just maybe give me briefly what this conference was hoping to do.
Yes, well, thank you so much. And I think that's exactly right. It's such an important point to make that while the politics is sort of happening out there and takes up a lot of air in the room, so to speak, there's so many other things happening. Business is happening, right? These things continue to go on, person-to-person exchange, tourism. And that's right. Within universities, we have longstanding collaborations and networks that we have continued throughout many administrations on both sides of the ocean, so to speak. And so, there were many themes that were considered. This is not the first of these network conferences that have been held between WITS, Africa Center for the Study of the U.S., and American universities that also focus on both America, particularly the diaspora and African studies programs. And so there were a lot of themes, as you mentioned, including, the diaspora connections between the continent, as you say, decolonizing the curriculum, which we have a lot of work to do in the U.S., and we have a lot to learn from South Africa, and we certainly know that South African universities have been looking at. So those exchanges are always vibrant and valuable, really, to both sides, and they were last week to us.
So while we all know that, you know, person-to-person relations continue, and culturally we continue to engage with one another and relate really, really well, just, you know, how has the geopolitics affected things like, for instance, research in that collaboration? Because we know that some funding has been withdrawn, for instance, and I know we, you know, South Africa did a lot, for instance, in the AIDS programs and research programs and collaborated a lot with scientists across the continent as well. How have, you know, geopolitics affected some of the really important research work that's been going on between ourselves? Maybe give us a sense of how things are going in reality at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certain sectors have been harder hit than others, and certainly public health and health is one area that was hit almost immediately. Development studies writ large has been hit. And within that, some of those development funds were going for research collaborations that in various sectors. So those were hit right away. And I think people have been slowly, you know, as the months have gone on, been able to sort of assess, you know, what remains, but also what are the opportunities and what are the synergies? And how can we continue to do this work in other sorts of ways? And, you know, I think this conference was an example of that. You know, we made this conference hybrid from the beginning so that people who couldn't travel to South Africa would be able to be part of the conversations. And so in that sort of way, right, some of us, like myself, were able to travel here to be in person with our colleagues. And I feel really lucky for that because I was able to use some of my own research funds and some other kinds of support. But also colleagues were able to join for a nominal fee to join the conference, a conference fee, which helps support the running of the conference out of WITS University, which, you know, again, sort of is a fundraising model. for supporting this work, but doesn't require quite as much funds as before. So there's still work to be done to sort of creatively think about how we do this work. But I don't think by any means have we or ought we to give up on funding just because, you know, the biggest donors have had to walk away or been forced to walk away in the short term. We ought to both continue to fight for this kind of funding from our governments. And here I'm speaking, you know, loudly as an American on this, and I will continue to, but also to, you know, kind of think creatively again, you know, where are the business interests, for example, that we can think creatively about media interests in this example that we can, and we will continue to. And that was what some of the discussion last week was about. Diaspora, again, lots of diaspora interests, and how can we creatively engage these networks of folks to support research and collaboration and exchange, not just for themselves, but for future generations that want to network.
I suppose, I mean, we also have to acknowledge the fact that universities are institutions that advance knowledge. And so perhaps even at difficult times like this, it's really a wonderful time, I suppose, to come up with new ideas, you know, things that will advance us as a people, both here in South Africa as well as in the US. Just maybe give me a sense of what other things are brewing underneath there and in your closed door meetings that we could look forward to, and maybe what's exciting academics at the moment, even with these challenges.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really exciting things in, I think, the interdisciplinary space. You know, so thinking outside of our sort of traditional departments, I'm a political scientist, for example, you know, but what are the politics of climate change? And how can we be thinking, you know, with our colleagues in the physical sciences about research around green energy, the politics of green energy, the business of green energy, you know, the arts and public engagement and public education with folks in education, with media, with arts and education. So the transdisciplinary, interdisciplinary spaces and conversations were, I think, and have been for a little while, but are more and more relevant and important for us to be thinking about. And again, I think, you know, these sort of politics and funding challenges only sort of propel us faster in a direction that we were already going, but they give us kind of the creative energy and impetus to do that more. And I think, you know, also our students really want us to, right? They're thinking in new media spaces. They're thinking urgently about questions of conflict and climate change as well. And so they wanted us to do this faster anyway as well. And in you know, decolonialized ways, which is more than just a catchphrase for them, right? It's about thinking about outside of, you know, just theories and books by old white men, but in new ways of you know, urgent ways, relevant ways to the work that the kinds of workspaces that they are entering into and the new technologies that they're already using. So those are the, you know, the really exciting ways. And again, this conference, you know, we had a fee for students. We were very actively encouraged students from both students at U.S. universities at WITS and at African universities to enroll postdoctoral students, postgraduate students, undergraduates as much as they could. Of course, you know, the term times are different and so on. So there's always those challenges. But that's very present of mind for all of us. We're teachers first and foremost, so we're always wanting our students to be in those conversations with us. And they were last week.
You know, I'm keen to hear what you make of the voices of literally the global student currently and how loud and bold it's been during the kind of geopolitical climate that we are all witnessing at the moment. And maybe, you know, your own perspective on being so close to witnessing how young people are expressing themselves as the world changes in the way that we've witnessed a change. Just maybe give me that sense, because we get to see it on television, and maybe, you know, some of us have family members, but we don't really interact with it perhaps as closely as you would in a university.
Well, it's funny that you should ask that, right? I mean, because as a person who teaches politics, and I teach a very engaged form of politics. So in, several years ago, we did a course that our students actually wanted us to teach. Multiple colleagues and I did a whole module on activism in higher education. And one of the, we did several case studies. We did activism in urban Detroit. We did the first Intifada and activism in that case. And we did South Africa and the involvement of students in South Africa in the anti-apartheid struggle. And the relevance of that has reverberated, right? And so if you think about fees must fall and roads must fall, these are things we've continued to teach with and to our students in the United States. And it has so much relevance now as students have said, what is happening, right? Where are our institutions? What is an institution without people, right? And that's part of what we teach them. And the lessons, again, between and across South Africa and other parts of Africa, right? If we look at Kenya and what's happening there right now, these are
Right
young
now.
people on the streets in Kenya. And they've been young people on the streets in South Africa and many places in the United States, the encampments last spring around Gaza and Palestine. These are young people in the United States that are saying, these are the issues that matter. This is the kind of topics we want discussed. And this is how we want to engage with them, right? In these particular ways, both digitally, but in real time, in really embodied ways. And so as teachers, we want our students to be critical, but also comparative. And so for me, as a comparativist political scientist, it's deeply important for me to be here in South Africa, learning not only historically about this, but in the very contemporary period about what these things mean to South African students, to Kenyan students, and to other students. So I have a lot of learning to do, and I intend to take it back and forth between and across these spaces.
I mean, you speak of Kenya, for instance, and we've watched what seems to be like this relentless force against young people over maybe the past 2 months. I mean, it feels quite uncomfortable watching. We've seen this in universities around the world where there is this, uncomfortable level of violence against young people who are trying to just speak up. When we witness that, it is uncomfortable. When you speak to students, in your own campuses, does all of this make you feel a bit more, I suppose, are you optimistic? How does that land with you?
Sure. That's a great question. I do feel optimistic. I mean, of course, I too feel uncomfortable in the sense of the kinds of state level violence that's brought against our young people. When I look at Kenya right now, when I looked at the violence against student encampments and student protesters in a number of cases last year in the United States and moving forward potentially. But I am it does actually make me optimistic because I think what we're seeing are young people who, again, have a great urgency about the politics of now and about their future, but really about now, about the world that they're being, asked to take up the mantle of and saying, but if you're asking us to do that, this is the these are the questions that we want to talk about, and this is the way that we expect to be engaged in that discussion. Peacefully, of course, it ought to be. And as their teachers, that's what we're encouraging them, to think about it, and to think about models for. But the optimism for me comes, and my students will say to me sometimes, like, what, how, Professor Smith, but how do you become optimistic in these times? And I say, what our ancestors did, how could they imagine, right? How could South Africans imagine a world beyond apartheid? How could Black Americans and women imagine a world that allowed them to sit in Georgetown, right? When just several decades ago, none of this would have been possible. Me as your teacher, or others within, Kenyans as well. Imagining a post-colonial Kenya that had them. So we have to imagine, and we must be optimistic. And actually, we can. And I feel very optimistic for that because I see in them a great capacity, as great as their ancestors had, if not more. And so that's where my optimism comes from.
It's always interesting to hear the perspective of an outsider, and I'm just not in a negative way, but when you're looking from outside mm-hmm. in, when you look at the continent and, for instance, what's happening in Kenya, for instance, as an example, mm-hmm. does that also give you a different sense of what the African continent is about? Because, of course, for a long time, there's always been this narrative. Now, you being a scholar, maybe you don't have that perspective, but is there a sense that the world needs to start seeing the continent in a different way, particularly when they start looking at what young people in the continent are saying?
Mm-hmm. You mean from the popular narrative?
From the popular narrative, sort of
accurate narrative.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so, my job, I'm the director of the African Studies Center. I teach African politics. I've been teaching African politics for more than 20 years now, which is remarkable. And the amazing part about the challenges of the present moment in American politics for me mm-hmm. is it actually makes teaching African politics easier in America. Mm. Because for me and the way I was trained coming out of an African studies tradition, not an American studies tradition, and being trained by some very solid Africans and Africanist-oriented scholars is that the idea was always that we would learn from Africa to inform the, America. So we would take Africa on its own terms and learn about it. And so I always go into my African politics classes saying, we're not here to learn about American policy in Africa. Mm. We're here to learn about African politics. Hmm. However, you know, if you want that to be to inform your future career in American foreign policy, because, of course, I teach at Georgetown. Many of them want to go into the UN or the U.S. government. I say, that's fine, but you will apply that later. In my class, we're here to learn about African politics. That's what we're here to do. And that became actually easier, about around the time of 2017, 2018, that because suddenly students could see that there was real learning to be had. And I had a harder sell on that earlier when there was this kind of sense of, no, we're the ones to do the teaching, right? So it's a strange irony for me as a teacher. But all that is to say is that, back to this question, for me, it has always been, I have always come to the continent to learn from Kenyans about how to be socially, politically, economically engaged. I started my work in Zimbabwe in 1995, and I always, took those lessons from Zimbabweans of how they were critiquing their regime in 1995 already. And so I feel those lessons are now serving me very well, and actually have so much to offer to Americans. And I'm happy to report that my students are more and more open to those lessons than they ever have been.
Well, I mean, we love hearing that, and we really applaud that, because, as you said earlier, there are things like, for instance, the green politics, the politics of the global warming and all climate change, and how, as the continent, it's so difficult to get our point across, because for us it's not black and white. It's not very simple. Mm-hmm. It is complicated. And as complicated as it is, it affects us the most. That's how we feel. Mm-hmm. And it's so amazing to know that the world appreciates that. We may see it in a slightly different way, but, our voice does matter in some of these, some of these discussions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I don't know when you're leaving, but it's been absolutely lovely having you on the show. I hope you get some time to enjoy. I'm sorry we didn't give you much sun. I don't know if you
actually, you gave me lots of sun. It was just a cold. The sun was stunning, and the blue skies were stunning. And I actually brought my teenage son with me, and we've had a few days to see some of the historical and just beautiful sights of Joburg. Excellent. So it's been really wonderful. Thank you.
Well, we hope you come back again and spend more summer days with us when it is actually warmer. But I really appreciate it, and maybe we'll keep talking to you as you return back home. We can just do another Zoom, but really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for your contribution.
Thank you for the honor of having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's the Director of African Studies at Georgetown University in the US, Professor Lara Smith.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.